It's a News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. My next guest, David Gallo, is one of the first explorers to map the ocean world using both robots and submarines. In 2010, he helped lead an expedition to create the first detailed map of the Titanic wreck. He also helped locate the remains of Air France Flight 447 in 2011 and has appeared in several documentaries, including Why Planes Vanish, which is a look at the disappearance of the Malaysian airline Flight 370. Yesterday, Gallo gave a presentation at the Des Moines Area Community College, the West Des Moines campus, DMAC, on the importance of exploring and understanding the ocean. He joins me now for a few minutes. Dave Gallo, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Ben. My pleasure.
We are in Iowa. You have been in Iowa, yeah. At least 1,000 miles from the nearest ocean. Why should Iowans care about what happens in the ocean?
Well, that's what a lot of people think, that we live a long way from the sea. But in fact, the oceans, in a nutshell, they provide us with half of the air you breathe. Here in Iowa, you can thank the oceans for that, 50% of the oxygen. Almost all the rainfall patterns are controlled by the ocean, so the water we drink, and then about 2 billion people on this planet depend on the oceans for food. So, the weather patterns we're dealing with right now, and whether it rains or doesn't rain or snow or doesn't snow, how much, how little, how warm it gets, that's all pretty much controlled by what happens way out in the Pacific. So no matter where you live, the oceans have an influence on you.
Mm-hmm. What are the greatest questions in your mind about our oceans, about our seas, that are still unanswered? What's at the top of the list for you?
Yeah, well, Ben, we know the headlines. The headlines are that we need to understand the oceans because they're constantly changing. And we need to understand what those rhythms, the natural rhythms and cycles are of the oceans. But then we need to know what the human impact is. And things that we thought were okay many years ago are turning out to be not so okay. For instance, if you go to the middle of the Pacific and catch a fish and look in the stomach contents, you'll find micro bits of plastic. If you look at the flesh, you'll find chemicals, the pharmaceuticals, herbicides, pesticides, all the things that we think is great for us, not so good for the ocean. So that's it, is understanding the natural rhythms and then the human impact on those rhythms.
Mm-hmm. Is there anywhere we can go in the planet's oceans where you don't find at least some impact of human presence on the Earth?
Yeah, I've never seen that, Ben, and I've been in pretty much all of the oceans, but I can even remember being out on Titanic and the first day of coming across the site of Titanic, walking out on deck, and there were all sorts of plastic bags surrounding the ship. It was pretty disgusting, actually, that it came up the Gulf Stream from the east coast of the U.S.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's it's getting to be that way, and something we never knew about before, but now we're beginning to understand just how much impact we're having on the sea.
How much of the ocean is unexplored?
A lot. I think we've only had a good look at about 8%, and so there's 92% that's been unexplored, and 70% of the world is ocean. So when you think about that, we're basically living on an unexplored planet. And when you go to the bottom of the sea, there's mountains, there's rivers, there's valleys, there's waterfalls, there's lakes, there's all the things that we're familiar with on land we find at the bottom of the sea, and they all need to be explored.
Uh-huh. We've gone to the moon. We're thinking about going to Mars. We've explored a lot of places outside of our Earth. Given what you've just said, it makes me wonder why we haven't paid more attention to the oceans.
Yes, in my 30-some-odd years of being in this business, I've always wondered that given what we know, especially now, why we just take the oceans for granted. And I'm not sure what the answer is to that. I think we've done a pretty poor job explaining to the public and the decision makers about why the oceans are important. I think that's part of the equation. We need to do better at that. But not to take anything away from the space stuff. I mean, the space exploration is fantastic, but we should start paying attention to our own home planet for sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay, take me, at least in radio terms, to the deepest, darkest, most inaccessible part of the ocean. Where is that, or where do you think that is?
Well, I would say probably, in terms of depth, the Marianas Trough. And Jim Cameron, the director of Titanic and Terminator and Avatar, went there by himself in his own home-built underwater spaceship called Deep Sea Discovery. And you know, you start at the surface, no matter where you go. You start at the surface in that lovely colored blue water, the Jacques Cousteau blue, and then as the sub begins to sink, that blue fades to deep blue, then dark blue, and then it's about a 2.5 hour journey to the halfway point in the oceans. For two of those hours are in positive pitch black, and so there's never been any sunlight. It's freezing cold. The pressure is immense, but even in that world, that's hostile to us. We find all sorts of life thriving inside that world. So it's just a dreamlike world once you get below where sunlight penetrates.
What's the deepest you've been in our ocean?
Oh, I'd say 2.5-3 miles, something like that. Somewhere in that vicinity. So that's about the half the ocean depth. Most of the ocean is shallower than that.
Right. I'll shudder on behalf of all of the listeners who just heard that you were 2.5 miles under the ocean. And ask you this, how do you stand not being creeped out, being so deep in the darkness, in a confined space? Is it something you get used to, or something you were fine with from the beginning?
I don't think you ever really get used to it, and I haven't been in the sub in a long time. We've been using robots most lately, but I'm due to get back in the sub, and I'm anxious to find out about whether 20 years older or how I feel about being in a tiny little space with two other people. But I can tell you that even when I was younger, it is a daunting experience to be in there for 10 hours in that tiny little titanium bubble, but what's going on outside the sub just takes all that away. It goes by incredibly quick because everything you see outside the window, it's probably the first time and maybe the last time anyone has ever seen that landform or those kinds of animals.
You spent a lot of your career looking for lost things. I mentioned the flights, also Malaysian Airlines, the Air France flight that crashed in 2009 that was located in 2011. Why is it so hard? What is the real trick of finding something under the ocean? It seems to confound at least people who listen to the news that these things can't be located.
Yeah, I'm always amazed at how little people, we have to rediscover the oceans, that it's not a big blue fishbowl, that it's an unexplored world. And yet at the bottom, there's the world's highest mountains, the deepest valleys. It's a very, there's earthquakes, volcanoes. It's just not what people think. And it's deep. The average depth's 2 miles. So when something sinks to the bottom of the sea, it's going into a totally unexplored space. And it might as well in some ways be on Mars, except for Mars you can actually see at the bottom of the ocean. There's absolutely no light, so you've got to bring your own light. So everything is slow, and you know, ships only go 10 miles an hour, so if something sinks in the middle of the ocean or disappears there, it takes a week or more just to get out there. There's precious few tools. That we need special robots and submarines and all that, and there's not a lot on this planet. There's only a handful that can go into the deep ocean. And, you know, it always amazes me that even today, when something sinks into the deep sea, we would commit the ship or plane and the souls aboard it for eternity to the deep. And now with our technology, we've crossed that boundary. So no shipwreck is beyond our reach anymore. But this thing called eternity, we cross that boundary. So it makes, you know, when we do that, we go with a lot of respect for something like a shipwreck or a plane at the bottom of the sea. But the reason we get involved is because we have expertise of working in those worlds. There are very few people on the planet that have that kind of expertise, but it fits what we do. And it's important, I think, for the families of the victims of those disasters, planes or ships, and for the, in the case of airplanes, for the flying public as well, to find those planes and figure out what happened, why they ended up at the bottom of the ocean.
Dave, what's your big next exploration on the horizon?
Looking at a couple of them, of ships lost in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. But I think we're also looking at Shackleton's ship in Antarctica, that Ernest Shackleton lost his vessel in 1918 in Antarctica. But I think for me, I want to concentrate more on the communications point of view, is that given what we know today about how important the oceans are and how unexplored they are, how do we get that message across? So I'm going to spend a little bit more time in the next couple of years thinking about the communications aspect, about how to bring this story home.
I understand that you describe yourself, David Gallo, as a horrible student growing up. Mm-hmm. What was the problem? How old were you when you were having problems?
Oh, I think all through school. I was. If I go back and look at my report cards, and it was one of my most horrific days when my sons found my old report cards, and all C's and occasional B, but not and many D's. I had ADD. You know, I only found that out because my kids were tested about 10 years ago, and I found out that I have ADD. So I think that was the issue. And so I found it really hard to pay attention in class. Even though I had this burning desire to do science, to be a scientist, my teachers and my guidance counselor said, you don't have a chance. And, you know, it was pretty, in one moment, in one sentence, they were able to crush that whole passion I had. And so that's what I believed for many, many years, that I just didn't have the aptitude to do this.
Right. And you grew up in a time when ADD wasn't on the tip of everyone's tongues. So
right.
What help did you get, or did you get any?
No, I never got any help. In fact, what I grew up with the stigma that I never worked to ability, and I disturbed others. So it was horrible, you know. And I have to tell you, truthfully, I'm probably the same way now in meetings. I don't think I've changed. I'm still, still the same person. So
you're not a favorite in meetings?
No, it's all. Everyone always says, "Oh, great, we're going to spend the next hour looking at Dave's iPad."
So doing that poorly in school, getting those bad grades, where was the breakthrough? When was your learning passion ignited so that you could be productive?
It was in the middle of my experience of selling shoes. I did that for 7 years in a local mall in Albany, New York, and I picked up a National Geographic, and there was an article by Bob Ballard. I was in my mid-20s, and that article rekindled my interest in exploration. And I went to it all started with a community college. That I went to a community college, and it was a different sort of experience for me. And the people, the teachers were interested, and the other students were just like me. And from there, it was 2 years that I really put my mind into it, got my bachelor's, got my master's, and then at SUNY Albany, State University of New York at Albany, and then got my PhD. But the important part was I didn't get smarter. I just flipped that switch of curiosity and ended up, just working really hard to make it all happen. Mm-hmm. So,
as a fan of National Geographic magazine, you have probably seen the latest issue. It's sitting on my coffee table at home. I haven't had a chance to get into it, but I did see the cover. An issue dedicated to the various facets of what is termed the war on science. I want to ask you in closing. Why do you feel many reasonable, intelligent people doubt science and that process?
You know, Ben, I don't know. And what I try to do, because, again, you know, I'm people sometimes tell me you have a great way of breaking it down for the normal person, but I'm careful saying I'm normal, but, I talk the way I talk. And the conversations I've had with some of the people that doubt science, we seem to come away from that okay. I blame sometimes the media and some scientists that want to make science above humanity. And to me, that's just foolishness, because it's things that we live with every single day. So I think it's a communications issue. And I think once people can get someone to speak to them in normal terms, tell me what's going on, what do you know, what don't you know, what do I need to know, things can be okay. But we're a long way from that. So we've got this real movement growing that science is necessarily not great for humans.
David Gallo, one of the best-known explorers of the ocean world. He visited Iowa this week, the Des Moines Area Community College in West Des Moines campus of the DMAC. And David Gallo, thank you so much for spending a few minutes with us.
Thank you, Ben. My pleasure.